Stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I will be continuing to talk about the impact of our unconscious on our daily lives. Some of the surprising things you can expect from your unconscious and how to see it working undercover. I'll also be interviewing Mark Smith, my first interview with an architect. And Mark is a really interesting, funny, talented man who tells me lots of things I didn't know, and maybe you don't know, about the profession of architect. Okay, so any second now, here comes the show. Welcome to The Lynn Show. As I like to say, welcome, welcome, welcome if this is the first show you've heard, and welcome back if you've been listening. I am recording this show in the middle of September. So we have just experienced three back-to-back pretty strong hurricanes here in Florida, although that's me knocking on wood. Where I live in beautiful Sarasota, we've gotten a bunch of rain, which of course is the good news, but none of the devastation that has happened to our neighbors. I don't know what the weather is like where you are. I hope that the weather has been kind to you. And you're going to be hearing this show in October. I hope that the weather has continued to be kind to us. I spent almost a month in Los Angeles, where the weather was unbearably hot and humid. And it really makes me giggle a little, because when I moved from LA to Florida, everybody said, "You're going to Florida, that hot, humid place, when you could stay in beautiful, dry, wonderfully weathered Los Angeles? Are you kidding?" And so, of course, one of the ironic perks of global warming for me is that it isn't any more comfortable in Los Angeles than it is in Florida in the summer now. And Florida has lots of things LA doesn't have. It's prettier, it's quieter, it's more civilized, it's easier to get around, it doesn't have long lines in front of everything, and you can still drive and arrive where you're going in a reasonable amount of time without using up all your gas. Enough of this, Lynn. So, if you are new to the show, I have been spending the first half of my show working my way through my book, which is called When You Can, You Will, which is about why people can't make changes in their life when they want to. And I am just about through with chapter 5. Chapters 5 and 6, and maybe 7, all have to do with the unconscious. And I've been talking in the last few weeks, I think all of September actually, about the tricks that our unconscious uses to protect us from changes which we are not yet ready to make. If you heard those shows and are interested in one or another of those tricks, like the Freudian slip or the inner DJ or the wandering mind, all those shows, all the podcasts of those shows are up on the website, and you can go and listen to them. If you didn't hear them and you're curious about the tricks that your unconscious may be using to protect you, the podcasts are up on the website. You go to the website, thelinshow.com. I need to say that if you Google The Lynn Show, two listings come up at the top, and the first listing is the old version of the website. The second listing is the new version, and it's the one where you can actually play all the podcasts. So if you're interested in them, please go up and listen. I'm going to talk some more about the unconscious today, and hopefully I'm going to get around to starting what's in Chapter 6, which is the big trick, the unconscious's main trick, and that is camouflage. So I'll either get around to it today or I won't, because I'm going to play an interview with Mark Smith, the wonderful architect. And as I said, if you were listening at the head of the show, I learned all kinds of stuff about architecture. Not about architecture, but about what it means to be an architect and how dedicated they are or can be, if Mark is any example. So, before I play Mark's interview, I want to talk a little bit more about the unconscious, and specifically about the way we are in denial for who we are. Many of us think that there's a way that we should be, some way that's the right way to be, and that if we're not that, well, then there's something really wrong with us and we have to be ashamed of it. So in desperate attempts to convince ourselves that we are who we should be, even if we're not, many of us turn our backs on who we really are. We discount anything that threatens to expose our true self. Day after day, month after month, year after year, I see men and women who are ashamed of being shy, aggressive, sexy, or petty. People who blush and stammer when they're caught acting jealous or short-tempered or gullible, as though there was something wrong with being these things, as though these things were not part of the human condition. The truth is, you cannot be something that the rest of us are not. So if something is true of you, even if it's one of these qualities that you dislike, despise, are ashamed of, well, they're true of the rest of us. It's not the characteristic that's dangerous. It's our need to deny the characteristic that gets in our way. It's the suppression of the quality, not the quality itself, that harms you. Fear, grief, even rage will flare up and be gone if it's fully expressed at the time it's experienced. When you inhibit the expression of any trait, whether it's positive or negative, it hurts you. First, you have to squander energy, hiding the hated quality. Second, even when you've successfully concealed it, you always suspect that should this quality ever be exposed, should it pop out, it would cost you your place in another's affection because it would make you somebody they wouldn't like because it's a quality you don't approve of. Third, the unexpressed, hidden emotions accumulated over time, hey, they become a terrible psychic burden. And as we all certainly know now, they can have a physical price. Repression of qualities and emotions injures others as well. Unexpressed, accumulated emotions can be indirectly expressed in the most sneaky ways. These things can, of course, be harmful, and they are often known by the label passive aggressiveness. When forced deeply undercover, accumulated emotions can sometimes erupt with really unpleasant consequences. It's the suppression over time that makes anger or despair break out in unmanageable and dangerous proportions. When you can recognize, accept, and express all of who you are, even if these aspects of yourself are not your favorites, you'll have access to all of your energy, and it's this energy that we all need to build our life. Remember, you are receiving a steady stream of information coming from your unconscious mind. Allow it to help you. By using slips of the tongue, causing you to forget to remember, encouraging your mind to wander, using the inner DJ. And by the way, I heard another wonderful example of inner DJ, which is what I talked about last week. This man said he was in some class and they were given this assignment to capture their thoughts every morning upon waking. And so he did that, and he noticed to his horror that every morning he woke up humming the tune his inner DJ had programmed, "Smile, though your heart is breaking." And it forced him to recognize how much pain he was in that he'd been unaware of, and how he had managed to cover that with a smile. So by using all of these methods and any number of ones which I may not know about that your unconscious has put aside specially for you, and in any number of ways making you act like someone you don't recognize, your unconscious is teaching you about yourself. It's constantly telling you who you are, as well as stopping you from doing things you're not yet ready to do. Can you let yourself listen and maybe learn something? Like this guy who finally listened to the song his inner DJ had been playing over and over and over for God knows how long. And then he learned a lesson about himself, which was not his favorite thing to learn, but it was the beginning of helping him to heal the pain that he had been suffering so he didn't have to smile to hide it. The most important lessons you will ever learn are the lessons about yourself. If even briefly you can put aside your old notion of who you have to be and notice what you actually do, you may discover someone you didn't know was there. You may disapprove of some of the things you learn. Maybe you've always thought of yourself as and always behaved like a generous person, and you discover that you have a stingy streak. Oh, big deal. We all have it, even if we don't all demonstrate it. But you may also have thought of yourself as a timid person, and you may discover to your surprise that you have an aggressive streak. You are capable of standing up for yourself, but you've hidden that quality undercover, or at least your unconscious has helped you. When you see yourself behaving in contradictory ways, ways that challenge your idea of who you have to be, it may seem to your conscious mind, you know, that one that you think of as all there is, it may seem to your conscious mind that you're out of control. You may be afraid that your actions are random, unexplainable, and maybe even dangerous. But your unconscious mind is in control. And simply recognizing that your unconscious mind is in control can make a huge difference in your life. Next, I'm going to talk about the cleverest trick in your unconscious's bag. That's the trick called camouflage. It's the capacity of our unconscious to use camouflage to direct our attention away from those things that endanger us. That's the most powerful method it has for keeping us from changing prematurely. Recognizing and understanding this awesome maneuver can increase your appreciation of that silent guardian that vigilantly watches your back, jealously guards your darkest secrets, and will, in the moment that you are ready, return you to yourself. That's what I'm going to talk about next. I think there's a little time at the end of the show. I'll start there. If not, then it'll be in the next show. But right now, I want to play my interview with Mark Smith, architect extraordinaire. And I don't know, maybe I'll interrupt the interview, but probably not, to read you the quote. Early on in the interview, Mark talks about a quote that he can't quite remember, and then he emailed it to me. So it's a man named Bernard Rudolfsky, who I imagine is a famous architect, although I didn't know that. And the quote that Mark wanted to remember is, "Architecture is not just a matter of technology and aesthetics, but a way of life, and with luck, an intelligent way of life." And when you listen to Mark, you can hear that it is, in fact, a way of life, and for him, an intelligent way of life. The other thing I wanted to tell you before you hear this interview is that it takes place on a night when we are in a terrific downpour and the electricity has gone out in Mark's office, which is where I'm conducting this interview. And so all through this, we talk a little bit about it at the beginning, but not enough so that you really know. You will hear splashing and crashing. You'll hear cars going by because it's hot. We're in Florida in the summer. It's hot, and we had to open all the windows for whatever breeze the storm would bring in because, of course, the air conditioning didn't work. And so in addition to all this noise, at the very beginning of the interview, well, actually, right before the interview started, I was trying to open the windows. I was trying to help. Ugh, always a mistake. And I think it had to do with the blinds or the window. I don't know. I couldn't figure it out. And so Mark is telling me that one has to be 10% smarter than the technology. I left that in, but of course, without this introduction, you've got no idea what we're talking about. So here now, the intelligent, clever, funny, talented, kind Mark Smith.
You have to be 10% smarter than the equipment.
10% smarter than the equipment.
This is a general rule.
This is a challenge.
It can be.
It can be.
Especially the more sophisticated the equipment, obviously, you've got to raise the bar personally.
I'm here talking to Mark Smith, who's instructing me on the proper way to use technology.
Well, the only way.
The only way. Actually, well, that's quite right, of course, because if you are not 10%, 10%. If you are not 10%
smarter than the equipment, odds are you won't be working the equipment.
It'll
be working you.
Yes.
Over.
A lot of my
experience.
Very nice. Very nice. You might think that Mark is a comedian and that is the art form that I am interviewing him for. But that's not the art form I'm interviewing him for. He's an architect.
Yes, I am.
Yes. A very skilled architect.
That's what I tell my clients, and they keep thinking I'm a comedian.
See, and a very funny, personally, a very funny man. So, Mark and I are here in the conference room in his office building in Sarasota, Florida, and all the electricity has gone out, and if you listen closely, you can probably hear the thunder. And we have all the windows open, and I was sitting here thinking, that this must be what it was like to be in old Florida.
It would be, except if you didn't have screens, you'd have the mosquitoes. So if you wanted to just watch yourself, that would actually bring it closer to
closer to the truth, yes. When did they invent screens?
Right before air conditioning, I believe.
Is that really true?
Well, it was before air conditioning. But
well, didn't they used to have mosquito netting?
Yes. Yes, they did.
And isn't that a form of screen?
Yes, it is. It's a mesh, right? Cloth mesh.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, it never occurred to me that in the when people were here before air conditioning, they also didn't have screens. Oh, my God.
Well, they may not. I mean, they're real early folks.
Yeah. Oy, hot and wet and bitten.
Yeah, well, yeah, if we didn't have air conditioning, Florida would be a sandbar.
It didn't get, what is the word, colonized? It didn't get populated until after...
Well, the 20s. The 20s, Flagler built the railroad from New York all the way down to the Keys to bring his New York buddies down.
And they had air conditioning then?
Nope. No, that was the 20s.
Right.
They didn't have any. No, but they had money, and they paid people to fan them.
Is that true, do you think?
Well, I'm sure it is.
Yeah, I'm sure it is.
I'm sure it is. Yeah. So we're talking about very rich folks. poor people sweat no matter where you are.
It's the truth.
That's the way it works.
Wow. Well, okay, so here we are, and I haven't told Mark anything about the interviews because I don't tell anybody anything about the interviews. I don't have an agenda, and I don't have questions. What I have is a curiosity about how people who fell in love with some art form, how that happened to them, what made them choose it, if they're glad about it, the road to it.
I'm not sure you choose it. I think it chooses you.
Yeah.
And I don't know what else I'd do if I wasn't an architect, which can be a scary thing at times.
Times like these.
So, I mean, it's, you know, as a kid, I would play with the building blocks, and I had every building block ever made. And, you know, as you get older, in my case anyway, I pursued drafting and then eventually enrolled in architecture.
Did you draw as a kid, or you just built?
No, we did a little drawing. Actually, I remember drafting floor plans and things with my friends, houses that we would like to live in, that type of thing.
How old?
13, 14 maybe.
You were drafting. You were drawing houses you would like to live in when you were 13 or 14 or 12?
Yeah.
That's really interesting. I think that's unusual, don't you? And you had other friends who also...
I know it's hard to believe I have other friends. I get that a lot. But, yeah, and actually, the friend I would draw this with actually never went to college and is an auto auto painter, cars. So just because you draw plans as a child doesn't mean you become an architect. You could become a painter of automobiles.
Yeah, but it's just interesting to me. Well, you know, I'm really captured by what you said about how it chooses you.
Yeah, it's in you or it's not.
So you're saying that you were always interested in making things out of...
Construction or design.
Or design.
And so I probably could have gone into building construction because I'm fascinated how things are built. But I enjoy design.
And so that's where you specialized.
Right. That's what architects do. Architects come up with the ideas and then...
Builders build them.
Well, we figure out how we think it should be built, and then we talk to a contractor on how it actually gets built. And so, it's usually, sometimes they intersect or parallel or something.
So some people do both? Is that what you mean? Or
there's design-build firms, but architects in general bring a higher level of design to the project. You know, anybody... And everybody, I find, thinks they can design. I can do my own house. And that's why the world is littered with crap.
With ugly houses.
Yeah, you know. So, I mean, that's the way that works. So, but, you know, that's... Anyway, I'm trying to think, remember a quote. There was a quote I heard recently that was very good about architecture. But I can't remember. So
well, and when it comes to you, I'll put it in there. But, I'm interested in this because I am virtually non-visual. I mean, I take so little information in through my eyes. And I have, in my view, no sense of design. And I don't even know what that means, design. And I also can't envision. Do you know what I mean?
I understand that. It visualizes things happening. But if you're good at design and an architect, you can actually invoke a feeling. Someone can walk into the space. I know you've done it. You've walked into the space, and the space felt good. It was mm-hmm. the proportion, the color, the way the light played in the room, the textures. You couldn't put your finger on it, but you felt good when you were in the room.
Right.
And good designers can make that happen. It's natural. They know the proportion of the room, what it should be, the size of the windows that need to be, the orientation of the building with the sun and the and the wind and the whole nine yards. I mean, good designers know that and work. It's like a palette. You can actually work with it, whether it be sunlight or color and texture and form.
Did you learn that?
You can learn, like you can learn painting. But you can learn to paint, but doesn't mean you can become a painter.
Right.
And that's the same type thing. You can learn the basics. You can learn color theory. You can study the great buildings and spaces before us, before our time, and things like that, and get a feel for it. And some of us are better at it than others. It's a craft, and you work at it. And one architect who worked for us told me it was an old man's profession. And I didn't know what he meant at the time. In fact, I hoped he was lying, because I was 20-something at the time. But actually, the longer I've been sticking at it, I believe it is, because you get better at it with time.
Is that because you have experience? I mean, you've seen how this worked and how that worked. And
that's it. And then even, I think Frank Lloyd Wright said that his recommendation to young architects was to do your first commissions away from your hometown.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. Because they may not be what you really want to be. I mean, you know.
You don't want to live with them.
Well, doctors bury the mistakes. Architects can just landscape it.
So, is that a quote?
That it is. I'm not, that wasn't Frank Lloyd Wright.
No.
Someone
no.
else.
Yeah, I'm sure.
It wasn't
a lawyer.
It wasn't me.
I was thinking when you were talking, then you went off somewhere else, and I wasn't sure this was accurate. But I was thinking when I went to school to study to become a therapist, a lot of what I heard there, dare I say, most of what I heard there, simply confirmed what I already knew. It wasn't like I was, I learned some things there. I don't mean to suggest that I didn't learn anything, but I went in with something that I didn't actually know until I was there, and I thought, oh yeah, well I know that, you know, that was, is it something like that?
Similar. I would say that when you start going through the courses, it reinforces what you already know. But architecture is not only an art, but it's a science. So when you're going
right.
through school, you're learning structures, physics, calculus. I mean, we're generalists as a profession, and so we know a little about a lot of things,
mm-hmm.
whereas engineers know a lot about a few things. And so we basically converse with our engineers, but also...
you say, I want to do this. Can this be done?
Right.
Or like that?
Right, and you should, when you're designing, you should have a basic knowledge of structures, for instance, so you don't just draw something that can't be built.
Can't be built.
That type of thing. So you need to have the working knowledge. I mean, some architects really do their own structural design, which is great. But again, we're more generalists, specialists.
Is this a passion?
I would say yes. Yeah, it is.
Because I'm thinking...
Because there isn't that much money in it. You know, I mean, that's
yeah.
the way it is. Architects are notorious for cutting their fees just to get the job. So it often, there is a passion involved in it then.
I'm thinking that I saw a documentary once about a conductor of, you know, like Philharmonic orchestras.
Yeah.
It was a woman. And, you know, there are not that many orchestras, period. You know, if you're a conductor, there's a small pool of orchestras and maybe a large pool of people who want to conduct.
No, that's true.
And there are fewer women conducting than men, so there are fewer jobs for women. And she was one of the people who did manage to get an orchestra. And she said, and I never forgot it, She said, you know, singers can stand in their living room and sing, and actors can act, and musicians can play, but a conductor needs an orchestra to do what they do. And an architect needs...
A client,
right.
Yeah, that's it. Or you're just drawing.
Well, I mean, would you sit around and draw for the sake of it?
That's what you'd end up doing. There needs to be some type of creative outlet, so yeah.
That was why I asked about the passion.
Yeah, I mean, there's competitions you can enter and things like that to, you know, hopefully land the commission or if nothing else, at least pass the time, I suppose. But eventually the power bill comes, so you better do something.
The power bill?
Power bill.
Oh, the power bill.
Well, maybe that's why electricity.
Yes, well, no, we're not going to, right.
Maybe that explains it.
Yeah.
It's all coming back.
Yes. Everybody on the street.
Well, apparently right. This whole group of deadbeats.
Yeah, right. Right. So, do you mostly know architects?
Do I mostly know them?
Yeah, do you hang out?
Well, actually, I'm an immediate past president of AIA Florida. Association of the American Institute of Architects. So
you hang out with a lot of them.
In fact, I just got back from our annual convention in Palm Beach. So, yeah, I spent the last 5 days hanging out with architects.
And do they talk architecture?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we talk shop.
Yeah?
And, what's going on. And it's actually therapeutic in that oftentimes we're all in the same boat. So sometimes it's, like I said, it's some soothing to know that an architect on the east coast of Florida is experiencing same thing that us on the west coast are doing. So, I mean, everything from getting paid by a client, struggles with getting a building permit, contractors that don't quite get it, to that type of thing. There's a whole array of facets of the business that we talk about.
That's separate from the design thing. I mean,
right, the design is actually a small portion of what architects do.
Yeah.
Although it's the one that draws us to the profession.
Yeah. Were you aware of that?
No,
yeah, right.
No, because in school, all you do is design.
Right.
You don't realize when you actually go and work for somebody that you could be doing toilet details for the next 3 years.
Yeah.
Or something, for a large firm. I mean, they don't hire a kid out of school, or it's rare that they're going to, put you in charge of design.
Yeah.
You don't even know how the thing's built. So, that's where that old man profession comes in. The longer you're in it, the better off, better you should be at it.
Right.
It's a theory, of course.
Yes. The more likely.
It's not guaranteed.
No,
you could ask people. I've seen folks that have a learning curve that's basically a straight line.
Yeah, all right.
So it's...
Yeah. Okay. So when I want to hire an architect, I'm not just looking for gray hair.
I wouldn't. No. Actually, some of the more exciting designs out there are by younger folks. No, absolutely not. You should pick an architect based on your similar design philosophies. And an architect that's interested in listening to you and interpreting how you live or how you work or how you play and then taking in everything you want as far as square footage and that type of thing and then coming up with an idea that perhaps you haven't thought of. But when you look at it, you go, yeah, that's what I want to do or that's I can see how that would work. The worst are the folks that know exactly what they want. Then they say that, and then they show you what they're looking for, or a picture out of a magazine or something like that. And nicely, when you talk to them, that maybe that's not really what they'd like to do. But, a good client is one that'll open themselves up for a creative input.
I'm thinking here, what an interesting dilemma this is. You get captured by this desire to design beautiful things. You go through a fairly rigorous training to learn the details so that you can apply your vision, so the thing doesn't fall down and that it, it stands up and that it makes sense and all that stuff. So you have this rigorous training. Then you come out and you do toilet detail for several years, so that you can become better at your craft, get a client, because who's going to hire somebody right out of school? And then after all of this time, You don't actually get to do the thing. You get to do what someone else wants.
Well, it can be the same thing.
If you're lucky.
If you have a good client.
If you're lucky.
You've got to be a certain amount of luck involved, yeah. Yes. Or you can work for a firm that has the clients already, and you join the firm so you can help them do that, and hopefully somewhere along the line they'll take your input.
Well, yeah, but I mean, it is possible then that you a certain amount of your work could be doing things that you don't...
Well, some of the best designs I've done have never been built.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Because?
Just didn't work out. They changed their mind, or
oh my god,
sold the property out from under them. Or, but various things can happen.
Wow.
Yes.
Yeah. There's a hell of a lot of frustration in this.
Well, most artists are frustrated.
Yes, they
are.
That's
just the way it works.
They are.
That's why I said you don't just select architecture. I've talked to high school students and college students who are thinking about going into architecture, and I said, well, you need to feel it.
Yeah, you need to want to do it.
In my class, I went to Georgia Tech, and there were around 400 in my freshman class, and I think there were 100 that graduated after 4 years.
My.
And then...
That's a lot of attrition.
Then there's 2 years of graduate school after that, so that's... And so out of those 100, 75 went on to graduate school, and out of that, 35 got out. So basically it was 1 out of 10 that entered got out with a degree, a master's of architecture.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Do you know why?
I do now. it's not. I mean, it's. It can be. It can be grueling. I mean, you come up with designs, and the professors would criticize them brutally sometimes. It's that art and science. Some people are stronger in science, and others are stronger in art. So you just flunk out one way or the other. It's long hours in school, staying up all night working on these projects. And so if you have a bad critique the next day or whatever, and you hadn't had much sleep. So, I mean, it's, like I said, you're drawn to it. You don't just say, I think I want to be
an architect. I'll be an architect, right. And I'm thinking about you and how hard that work was and how you don't present as somebody who, you know, you present so light. Do you know what I mean?
Well, you have to keep your sense of humor, otherwise, in life in general, let alone being an architect.
Everybody doesn't.
Absolutely. Well, they don't, and that's why they go to a therapist. So be grateful.
It's job security for me.
That's right.
Right.
No, just everyone's sad enough. You know, it's just me. I don't know. I think a lot of times my humor is me whistling in the dark. You know, I mean.
Well, but I wasn't actually talking about your humor, although, you know, clearly that is a very big part of you. You don't. I don't know how to say this. You don't present like somebody who would buckle down that hard and work that hard. And it's interesting because it's clearly true.
Well, I'm not sure I should be offended or not by that statement, but yes.
Do you know what I mean?
Well, I mean, I didn't say I got straight A's, so let's not go there.
No, but you worked really hard and you stayed. I mean, clearly
it up.
Some of those days you got criticized. Some of those nights you didn't sleep,
you know,
and you did it.
Yeah,
you know.
And it happens now, even. But, that's just part of it.
I believe you're the oldest child in your...
No.
Oh, that's right, you are not the oldest child. No. You have an older sister.
I had two older sisters.
But you're the boy.
Yes, at 53, I guess I'm still the boy.
You know what I mean.
Yes, I'm the oldest of the two boys. My brother is younger than I.
Right, but you got into the oldest boy position somehow. Or not.
Well, my mother was a chauvinist, and even though I had two older sisters, she wanted me.
She wanted the boy.
She wanted me to help run her affairs, so.
Right, right.
So that's my mom's fault.
Yes.
As with everything, as you know, being a therapist.
Yes.
It's always your mother's fault. I don't know what the fathers don't get blamed more.
They do.
Oh, damn it.
They do. You just missed it.
What?
You missed it. You didn't hear.
That program?
Yeah. You missed that program. Yeah.
So I'm being blamed for stuff and my daughters are blaming me for things?
No, your daughters aren't blaming you for anything.
Thank you.
No. Your daughters are grateful for you.
Well, and they should be.
Yes, they should. Because they have a really hard-working, responsible, caring parent.
Well, thank you. I don't care what anybody says. You're right.
And I think this is all, I mean, this is that thread, you know, that you worked hard as a young man helping your mother. You worked hard in school. You work hard at your work. You work hard at taking care of everybody who gets in front of you.
Yes, I'm really waiting for a break.
Are you?
I'd like to think so. Yeah, it'd be nice, wouldn't it?
To get a break?
Mm-hmm.
You think you want one?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Well.
I'm working on it.
Are you?
Yeah.
What are you doing?
Not volunteering for anything more.
Yeah, this is another big part of Mark's life. Is that it took him, for some reason, he didn't know that word.
Yeah, the no word.
The no word, yeah. Right. The no word, it is only recently creeping into his vocabulary.
Well, it crashed down on my head, actually.
Oh, it did?
Yeah. It did. Something right at the same time the economy.
Crashed. Yeah, the no word crashed.
Yeah,
right here.
Yeah, everything right. Crashed on my head at the same time. It was right. When the economy dropped down that I realized that I need to stop volunteering, but I'm still involved.
Yeah, but it's all that same stuff. I mean, it's all that stuff about your commitment to the things that you take on.
Well, I do take on a commitment.
Yeah, and I think that's what I was what I was hearing in school, that you took on the commitment.
It's a commitment, yeah, but you have to love it. You just can't. Otherwise, you should just be committed. But anyway,
I'm smiling because I think that it's possible that you have taken on commitments and honored them that you didn't always love.
Oh no, you do that. Yeah, I was married for 26 years. You don't have to go there. So.
Yeah, I didn't actually mean that, but of course that qualifies.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, I was thinking of something a little less committed. I don't, you know, a little less.
Like the window crank I've been carrying around in my trunk.
Yes, right. Yes.
Kind of stuff.
Right. Mark was gonna fix the window in my house, but
I was.
And he may yet.
It could still happen.
It could still happen.
I didn't realize that crank was like the Holy Grail.
Yes.
And there's only like two in existence.
That's right. Right. And they don't make it anymore, right?
I don't know. I haven't given up the hunt, but it has gotten...
Well, the window will be there whenever you find the crank.
Well, hopefully. We'll get it before a hurricane comes.
Well, it won't matter if you get it. I mean...
Well, the crank you're going to save from the hurricane.
No, that's right. So it doesn't matter.
All right.
No,
never mind. I'll give you your crank back.
Thank you. You started out by saying you couldn't think of anything else that you would do.
Yeah, I really enjoy being an architect. So I don't know what.
And that brings up that whole thing for me again. That same issue of that being an architect. In order to be an architect, in order to do that thing, you essentially have to have a job. I mean, you could say
you do. Yeah, absolutely. That would help. Unless you're. Had a good sense of being born rich.
And then you could just build.
Well, you'd be your own builder, developer, that type of thing.
Right. Or I suppose you could teach.
You could teach, absolutely.
Have you thought of that?
No. Some folks have suggested that I'd be a good teacher.
You'd be a wonderful teacher.
Well, some people have said that, but I think you're supposed to know more than the students. I'm not sure about
10%?
At least 10%. Yeah, keep on their toes.
Okay, so that's a joke, but
I'm not an academic. I'm a little bit different in thinking.
What does that mean?
I'm different in thinking. I mean, I don't think I can work for government either. there's certain, you need a certain mentality. You got to work within the system.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Be,
oh, yeah.
And I'm not a systems guy, a system guy, I should say.
Yeah, well, boy, I hear that.
So I just don't think that would happen. I'm not saying it couldn't happen if I had to have it happen, but no, I don't think it'll happen. Although the benefits are very good. I'm not saying anything against that.
And no. I understand that you're not knocking
no, and I'm,
the
and
thing.
I'm dating a female architect right now who teaches. So, and she really enjoys it, and she's good at it. And
but
she hasn't
she
practiced
can...
much at all. So she doesn't know what I do, and I'm not sure I know what she does.
You mean
we're both
it?
Architects. Yeah.
Oh, say that again. I mean, say a little bit more about that.
Well, I mean, she teaches.
So she teaches the theory.
Well, she teaches, yes, sustainable design and green building, and yeah, she teaches what should be done, and perhaps how you can do it to a certain extent, but not necessarily how you could get it built, or get it permitted, or how to talk a client into spending that, or doing that, or whatever. I mean, there's that whole deal.
That's all that stuff that you don't learn until you get out of school.
Oh, you don't learn any of that thing.
Right. And they still don't teach it.
Well, no, I mean, no, they don't. And I was when I went to college, one of the professors said, this isn't a trade school.
Ooh.
So you'll learn that eventually when you get a job. Well, in order to get a job, you actually need to have some practical knowledge that a firm might need.
Wow. So that's a snob thing.
And if and those of you out there that know architects, they can be snobs. And there's we have a... probably more of a reputation of being egotistical snobs.
Oh, it's an elitist kind
of
thing.
Oh, absolutely, and I should be much more elite than I am.
Nobody could be more elite than you.
Well, you know. So anyway, that's the architects or artists, and we're elitists, and we design these buildings as, you know, edifices to ourselves.
Yeah.
And not to the client.
No, it's this has been really interesting for me because... I guess I've never had a serious conversation with an architect.
Is this one?
It's as close as I'm going to get.
But this architect, anyway.
Well, this is as serious as this architect's going to get with
That's
me,
right.
my guess. Is
That's
so, right.
That's
right. But the idea that that one is in love with design, that one thinks about how design can impact living.
Yeah, in society. From the house all the way to the urban design,
mm-hmm.
the fabric of the city. It's the built
right.
environment. It affects us all.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a big deal.
It's huge.
Yeah.
Design matters.
Yeah, so, you know, talking to somebody who, you know, is lucky if she remembers, you know, where the ketchup went in the refrigerator. I mean, I'm just not visual. I don't see, you know.
But you perceive. And that's it. We all perceive.
Ah, you mean I sense whether it is comfortable or not. That's what you mean, right?
Comfortable, exciting.
Beautiful, right.
It stimulates you in some
right,
way.
Right.
Much like a painting or a sculpture.
Right. It can be a subliminal thing.
Absolutely.
Right.
You may not even know why you like it. You may not even know why you're smiling, but you just feel
it. Or why I'm uncomfortable.
Or why you're uncomfortable if the ceiling's too low or the aisle is too high or narrow or... You know, the rail's not high enough, and the depth of the railing, or what. I mean, there's all kinds of things that could happen to you that you don't even realize why you don't like it.
Wow. Well, this has been really interesting to me, and you're the first architect I've had a conversation like this with, and in fact, you're pretty much the only architect I know.
Well, they're not that scary. You can meet others.
And they're not hiding.
I know bunches of them.
Oh, there you do.
You wanted to get a cross-section.
Well, so, I mean, it's interesting because given how few managed to get through your training,
yeah.
there still are quite a lot.
Well, in the AIA, there's about 85,000.
Oh, my gosh, really?
Across the country, yeah.
Across the country, not just in Florida.
No, across the country. I believe there's... about 5,000 AIA architects in Florida, and there's probably a total of maybe 9,000 architects in the
wow.
state of Florida right now. I mean, a lot fewer than, say, dentists.
Or lawyers.
Lawyers, so, yeah, you can't swing a dead cat without a lawyer.
Right.
Which would be the reason probably why you're swinging.
I was thinking the same thing.
You know, but.
Well, all right, this has been great for me. Is there anything that you would like to say about life or architecture or...
I don't know. I think I've said it all, quite frankly. You know, I mean, but I leave you with that design does matter. Good design makes you feel good. And as simplistic as that sounds, it's true. And so if you're considering, you know, designing your house or office building or church, synagogue, whatever, hire a good architect. Hire one that is in tune with the way you want to live, and dream, and feel. And you'll be better off for it. You'll be happier in the long run.
Thank you. And I'm going to give everybody the information about how to get in touch with you, because certainly you are that guy.
I'm it.
You are. You are. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
Well, I'm sure that if you have need of an architect, you want it to be Mark. You want it to be somebody who is in love with what he does, who believes in what he does, who is captured by what he does, who continues to do it whether it takes good care of him or not. And that is Mark Smith. So if you are interested in discussing any architectural project and you want to call Mark, and as you can tell, I think that's the right choice, you want to call him at 941-346-7205. That's Mark Smith at 941-346-7205. Or you can email him at mark@smitharchitects.com. Or, as always, with everybody that I play interviews for, you can email me. You can go up on my website, thelinshow.com, click on Contact Me, write in Get Me Mark, and I will do it. So I'm closing in on the end of the time I have for this show, and I'm going to close the show with a cut from Lillette Jenkins Weisner's CD called In Peace and Love, of course. So Lillette. If you heard the interview last week, I promised to play a cut from that CD and that I would do it now, because I played the whole interview with Lillette and there just wasn't time to play any of her music, which is absurd because Lillette is all about the music. So I'm going to play this cut, and then next week I'm going to play another cut from a different album. She does everything. And not just this classical music, but jazz and calypso and country and religious music. Also, I promised to tell you how to get in touch with her, so that if you want to find out where she's playing or hire her, you call her at 941-922-0622, or as with Mark or Josh, who is my intrepid IT guy and without whom, as anybody who has heard any of these shows knows, I could not be doing this. You can go up on my website and ask me to get in touch with them. Okay, so here is Lillette Jenkins Weisner and Rhapsody in Blue. Thank you. that's playing the piano. As always, I hope that you heard something in this show that you can use, something that entertained you or engaged you, or at the very least made you want to come back and listen to another show, because next Tuesday at 1 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, 10 o'clock on the West Coast, or Monday at 3 a.m., I will be here again, and I hope you will be too. Tune in again next week when I'll explain about camouflage and play an interview with music business attorney Alan Arrow.
I'm getting older. My hair is turning gray. Oh, you say my face and figure have both seen better days. Well, I won't be retiring. I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go. My shot, my time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage, let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a bell I keep on ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly. Well, I don't give a dang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Rising from the ashes every chance I get. I may be running out of time, but it ain't over yet. 'Cause me and Sister Phoenix, we won't give up the flight. No, no, we will not go gentle into that good night. And I won't go with a whimper. Going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I may not be as juicy, hell, but I still got some tang. So you won't hear me simper. I may have gotten limper, but I won't.